This is the Kinky Cast, an adult, sexually explicit podcast. If you are under 18 years old, please stop the podcast now. This is episode 145 of our weekly exploration in the kinky world of BDSM and alternative relationships. Views expressed are not representative of the management of the Kinky Cast. We welcome guests with opposing viewpoints. Today, we will be speaking with David Mack, bondage film producer. Here's your hosts, Woody and the Beast.
Thanks, Max, and welcome to another edition of the Kinky Cast. Sitting next to me is the Beast. How are you?
I'm good, Woody. I'm good. I had a hot date with a 25-year-old last night and a 27 at the same time.
Oh, life is difficult.
Yes, my life is hard.
Yeah, I can tell, as you sit on the new casting couch.
Yes, yes, I am waiting to test it out.
Yeah, Yeah, Studio A is busy.
Yeah, yeah, well, I'll have to book time around you, I'm sure.
Yes, you will.
All right, Woody, we have filmmaker. I won't say porn maker, I'll say filmmaker. David Mack with us tonight. Hi, David.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you?
Very good. Welcome to the Kinky Cast.
Well, thank you. It's great to be on. It's a pleasure. I love podcasts. I've become a podcast junkie, and I think I'm the only person on the planet that has yet to do one. And I think I'll abstain for a while because I enjoy listening, and I enjoy listening to yours. I've been sampling as I've been looking forward to getting on with you this evening. Great stuff.
Thank you.
Well, we've got 140 of them in the can, and there's a lot of subjects out there. I had a young lady from Britain contact me recently and was asking some questions about getting into the scene and what to do. And I'm trying to remember back through all the episodes, what episodes could help her. And it was getting a little foggy in the far distance there.
Well, it's going on three years now.
It is. And the good news is we have a search engine on the homepage, and I was able to just go in and type munch and newbie and scene negotiations and stuff like that, which brought up a lot of episodes quickly. Without any further ado, let's jump back into here. The Beast introduced you as a filmmaker, and I've looked at a number of your films, and they're interesting. They're kind of light porn. It's not real porn the way I would think of porn, but it's real fetishy. Is that how you'd categorize it?
I try not to put it in any category. I think both of you are right. I mean, it is what the viewer makes of it, because I've always been into bondage since I hit puberty. I was one of those guys that as a kid, I would see the girl tied up on the Man from U.N.C.L.E. and I'd go, oh, you know, and I don't know what it was, but
it raises a flag.
Yeah. And ever since, once I got to legal age, I became a bondage video junkie. And through my 20s and into my early 30s, I had amassed a collection. I mean, I saw everything. And I had amassed a collection of hundreds of bondage videos. And I was just so into them. And that just was my main kink and my main fetish. But I have, as it turns out, I have tons of them, but as many of us do, I always wanted to produce them. And I always wanted to get my hands on them, basically. And so, basically, I started shooting video just to play. I had grown up as somebody that wasn't very socially adept, let's say. And so, I needed an outlet. And I never found any of the regular BDSM. I tried some of the clubs. I ended up being the asshole guy in the corner. I tried going to bars. I tried going to strip clubs. I tried doing this and that. And I finally, when the internet started taking shape, it presented an opportunity. Although before that, I wanted to do bondage videos because that was my way to play and to get with these hot ladies that I had jerked off to for all these years. And I tried, so I shot my first video in 1997 on 8mm tape. So I've always been a video producer. Yeah.
So you're pushing on 20 years now. That's quite an accomplishment.
20 years next May. I hardly consider myself a professional at this. As I said, I started out as an excuse to play. Yeah, and I've had some success with girlfriends or play partners and things like that leading up to this. But again, the internet did present itself with more opportunity. And so I had shot my first video before the internet really got started, and I tried to edit them on VHS and sell it to the companies in Los Angeles and got the door slammed in my face. But like I said, at that time, the internet just started winding up. And so I got an AOL thing, and I got a free web page, and I figured out how to make a free web page, and I started selling my homemade VHS tapes online. And it just kind of, you know, and if I made enough money that I could play with the next hot girl, I was happy. And I've had the best times in my career when I just kind of stick to that, when I'm really playing and not shooting. These are more of an archive or a video journal, as it were, of my own personal sexual experiences in bondage and my type of sexual foreplay, which is the fetishes that you see on my sites.
But obviously other people are interested in this too, that become your customers.
Amazing, isn't it? That was the thing that surprised me, actually. I knew there were like-minded people, but I never saw that. The type of things that the genre is now called forced orgasms, I was into that long before anyone was doing it. The first one I ever saw on a bondage video was the old House of Milan, H-O-M videos from a Tennessean, actually, Blakemore. And he did these 8mm film videos, bondage videos, where they were very non-consensual in the beginning, but they would end up being turned on at the end. And that's how he played those. And a lot of times he would strap an electric vibrator to the girls at the end and the video would fade out. And I'm like going, damn, I want to see what happens after that.
Yeah. I remember some of the HOM stuff. It was quite a tease, I thought.
Yes. Well, he liked to dance on the line, and he was very wary of the, and this is the 80s and the Reagan administration. When I first got into porn in the mid 90s, it still was a legal thing. People that do bondage and fetish and all of the things professionally these days in the clips for sale generation have no clue that people in the 80s and, you know, in the VHS era and the pre-VHS era, they had to deal with obscenity laws and the government really coming down on them for making porn, especially in the Reagan 80s. So he had to dance that line.
And you mix kink with it and bondage, and you cross the line just about every time.
That was verboten up until really I was flirting with it in the early 2000s myself, but I didn't want to cross that line, but it took kink.com, Hogtied, and that genre and their sex and submission site to go through that. And it had to take somebody that made enough money that could have the legal power to, you know, to get that through. Up until then, no one wanted to deal with it.
At that point in time, it really took off.
Yes. Oh, yes. And now even I'm whipping my dick out on camera and getting blowjobs. And, I haven't fucked a girl on camera yet, but it's still kind of like my foreplay. I think that's one thing that I would probably want to leave for off camera myself, but I never say never.
Getting blowjobs on camera. Tell me it isn't so.
I've been looking for that for 19 years. I finally did it the first time at FetishCon this year with my longest running and the model I've shot most scenes with, Winona. And she was a champ. It was a great, great time. And looking forward, I'm actually shooting with her again tomorrow. So I'm looking forward to burying my face in her ass again.
It's a dirty job, but you have to do it.
I'm very fortunate. I caught the wave at the right time. I was never good at doing it. I mean, I learned on the job. I mean, I had done so little bondage because, as I said, up to that point, I just was socially inept. and I couldn't find girlfriends that were into it. And I had, I don't want to deal into my own little psychoses and everything, but leave it to say that, I wasn't getting laid much until I started doing this business. Now, and I had to actually learn on the job socially as well as my on-camera performance. And like I said, if you would look at things that I do from the beginning, you'll see that I'm growing as well as, just in my sexuality through the years that I was doing this. So, I mean, and the fact that it became a business, if I was the person back then with the skills that I had back then starting today, I'd have no shot. I'd have never made it. I was very fortunate that I caught the internet wave at the right time. Now I'm a producer, and I put quotes around that. I never felt that I was one, and it still blows my mind when I get any kind of accolades. Really does.
David, I've heard your name in the business for many years, and so I think you've got it going on.
For good and for bad, I'm sure, and that's as well it should be.
But you're so right, in my opinion, David. Before internet and after internet, that was such a change in the community as we brought people together that were scattered far and wide and connected them through a thin wire that stretched thousands of miles and gave them new opportunities they didn't dream of.
Absolutely. The networking that happened, I started in AOL chat rooms, and I started downloading my first porn, internet porn from, I don't know your ages, but do you remember news groups?
Yes.
We know them, and yes, we're of that age.
Oh, and waiting for a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes for the image, for the GIF to download and come through, and it just came in from the top of the page and slowly filled in. And it was like, it was great if it was worth it. And then you go, that's not what I wanted.
Wasn't what you expected.
Your point that I've met a lot of the people that became industry icons, people of my, quote, generation of producers. We all met in AOL chat rooms. And that's where the networking kind of started. And producers, people like Matt Williams and people like Dan Hawk, who hasn't been in the business, but Gina Ray Michaels, who started as a model and produces content. Dominic Wolf made the transition into the internet, although he's been a producer in the VHS era. But there is a lot of people, and I'm forgetting other people, I'm sure, but there is a lot of people that came from that. The people that ran FetishCon, Vesta and Genesis Lynn and their sites. They all got started in those AOL chat rooms, and they started in the early days of the internet. And we all networked together and started all our sites all around the same time. And that's how we networked. And we found if we found a girl that was into it, it was like, hey, she's a player, let's go. Like one of my favorite all-time models and a dear friend of mine is Christina Carter. Who's she just won the first FetishCon award for most popular model. And she's been in the business as long as I have. She was like the third or fourth model I ever shot because she lived in Northeast Ohio. That's where I really started putting my websites together and everything. So a lot of times it was just luck. And then you go, hey, she's into it. I think you should work with her. And then it would take off from there.
And talent is changed so much. Back in those early days, you had a handful scattered far and wide, and now we have so many bunnies eager and excited.
And younger all the time.
Younger all the time. So how has the talent search changed for you?
The clips for sale generation has definitely added to that. Since the invent of that website, and where women are becoming their own producers, they can just set up a camera and do their own content.
Well, we certainly made it easier equipment-wise now. You spent a lot of money back in the early days, I'm sure.
Tons. I couldn't do video the first couple years of my site because bandwidth was just prohibitive. I had to go in with a streaming service because I insisted on shooting video. Nobody else did. Most everybody else were, photographers to start. They just put out photo sets in the earliest days of the internet. The only website I could afford to do it was Insects and PD out of New York. Somehow they had the money to be able to do live streaming video in a time where bandwidth cost thousands of dollars. A megabyte, not even talking, we weren't even talking gigabytes back then. To do that kind of a website was prohibitive.
Well, you know what's interesting about that is a lot of people back in those days, they had dial-up modems, and so they were fighting very slow receive speeds. If you could afford to get it up into the web and do the streaming and all that, which was expensive on your end, the experience was still very limited when you were on dial-up.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of video to be had. I mean, I tried to stay on the cutting edge of the technology. I mean, I was one of the first people to have an ISDN line in my home.
Ooh.
I was one of the first people with, thank you. I mean, I learned how to get into computers and get into the guts and fix them. I became kind of a geek that way, but mainly it was to change out the modems from 24, whatever it was, to 56.6 to 128. Every time a new speed came out, I was on top of that. Yeah, and I was like all in. So because I've always been a video person, I just can't. I can always look at photos and jerk off to them, but I always kind of put my own fantasies on top of that. I preferred video, and I preferred live streaming video. So I'm in my glory these days with being able to do that and sites like Hot Movies and be able to produce content that people can, with the proper bandwidth can stream on demand is fantastic. Love it.
The old MPEG ones at 320 by 240 pixels, boy, it was a little tough to watch.
These days I wouldn't be, with my old man eyes, I wouldn't be able to see it quite well, that's for sure. Thank God for 1080p and great video quality. But actually back then, I watched old 8mm film and it was grainy and it was...
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of difference between 8mm, sure.
Yeah, porn is porn. I mean, you would find it if you really wanted it. It didn't have to be high quality. What you wanted to see is what was on, the action going on. And I've always kind of felt that way. So as long as I made the whatever went on camera hot, that they could jerk off to, the quality, that was secondary. But these days, I've had to pay a lot more attention to quality than I did in the first half of my career because, quite frankly, most of the people now are, have broadband connections and most of my clients do have broadband connections. And even in emerging markets, around the globe, they're getting broadband. So, the quality needs to be there.
If we go back 20 years ago, you had a broadcast standard back then, which was still composite video and it was still standard definition. But nowadays, anybody can produce high definition. Even my new phone does 4K, and it's amazing. A less than $1,000 device shooting really good quality 4K video. It's moving fast.
Absolutely. I shoot a lot of my video with my phone these days. Now, I have all kinds of toys. So I spent thousands of dollars on cameras. I never spent the big money like Kink and the broadcast, the people that use high-end broadcast quality cameras. I never grew into that area financially to afford those kind of cameras. So I've always been more on the amateur side. I've had the prosumer cameras, the mid-range. I never went with just like something out of Best Buy, but I didn't go to B&H and get the top of the line HD camera either. I kind of stayed in the middle there and did a, I've always compromised value versus quality.
The Pro-Am has actually become the desired market here, I believe. people want in this day and age of reality TV. So many people want that slightly gritty, realistic edge to it.
A look and a movement and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I shoot a lot of content. These days, I do shoot a lot of content on my phone. I have a Note 4, the one that doesn't explode. I think I'll keep my Note 4, as a matter of fact, and not upgrade. But it has a fabulous camera. And like you said, I'm getting right in there and tickling a young girl's pussy and asshole with a feather. And I'm holding the camera in one hand and the feather in the other. And I've always kind of done that. In the beginning, I would hold my video camera and I'd be whipping a girl that's tied up. And I'm holding the camera in one hand and I'm whipping her with the other. So I always kind of, you know, did some POV style shooting. I not only have that, but I also have a pair of sunglasses that are 1080p surveillance sunglasses that were designed for law enforcement. And I will put them on occasion. The video quality indoors isn't as good, but and the audio stinks, but you can, you know, if I need to do two-handed detail, you know, I put those on and I get right in there. And it does show that nice gritty little, you're there.
It does bring new meaning to point of view at that point.
And I don't want to use a GoPro because I like to keep my models into the scene. You know, it's all about, I don't stage anything. I want the model to be getting off and everything. So if I have a helmet with a GoPro strapped on my head, that kind of will fuck things up in my opinion. So
I was going to ask if you had ever went there and what the model's reaction was.
Can't do it. Their reaction is pretty fun. You know, they laugh when I put the glasses on, but a lot of them that have worked with me a few times know they're fucked when I put the glasses on. So it actually kind of plays nicely. And now, because we're such a phone society, it's just very commonplace to be doing something with a phone in your hand. I'm doing like POV blowjob scenes and handjob scenes, and I'm holding the phone in one hand and I'm just kind of holding it out. If I get the shot, it's great. If not, who cares? I'm getting a blowjob. I don't care. So, but it's second nature, especially with younger girls. They live with
using this very phone that I'm Skyping with you to shoot my videos. And that's why I wouldn't wear a GoPro on my head. I'm just doing, yeah, it's kind of an amateur style. You know, I'm just shooting my foreplay. It's the things, what you see on my sites is the shit that I would do to my girlfriend or your girlfriend for that matter before I, you know, and then when the camera ends, you know, that's when I untie the girl and we just get down to good old fucking.
Sounds like a good idea to me. The younger generation right now has this affinity with phones. They're doing selfies all the time, so they're very used to posing in front of a phone. And so it's very comfortable for them also.
Absolutely. And God bless them, too, for that.
Exactly.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. It makes my morning. It makes my morning.
One of the other things that has changed over the years is you look at the number of people that are very free to put up their naked photos, like on FetLife and other places, where you go back 20 years and nobody did it.
Isn't it wonderful? I mean, that's I love to seeing the progression of the freedom of sexuality with women. The stigma always lasted that if a man was, you know, had multiple sexual partners, they're a stud. But if a woman had multiple sexual partners, you know, she was a slut in a negative term. You know, it was a derogatory term. And I consider slut actually now, and many women do these days, as a positive.
It's a badge of honor.
And it makes me so happy. Now, I'd love to say that I champion that, making slut a positive term, but this is becoming the era of the sexual woman and the women becoming as sexually active as men, and women are embracing their sexuality. And it's great to see young girls doing that. It actually, I think, will spell the death of pornography as we know it, because you're not going to need to pay for porn. It's going to be out there. These girls are going to be Snapchatting and Facebooking and or whatever venue allows that sort of thing. They're going to be out there doing it. And it's not going to be a need. But there are always going to be women that are going to make money off of their sexuality. And they're going to just do it directly. they're cutting out the middleman. Let's put it that way.
Most porn producers now are bemoaning the fact that so much free material is available on the net, on sites like X Hamster and so forth, and even Vet, that it's making their job so much harder. And the quality of much of the free, though, is of questionable nature, of course. And it's nothing like the quality that you are turning out every day. And we appreciate you holding to those standards.
Why, thank you, sir. The porn industry, they did it to themselves. In the early days, there's what's called affiliate programs, where they paid for clicks, for traffic. And so you could post, and they offered free content to guys to just post crap all over the internet. And if they drove traffic to their websites, then they got paid. Well, that turned into free porn. And what happened was these affiliate companies and people that knew how to use it were taking all this free stuff, promotional stuff that the mainstream porn companies were putting out, started these free websites and became multimillionaires because they knew how to play the game traffic wise and marketing wise. And actually in the porn industry now, the affiliate programs, the free porn are driving traffic, makes more money than actually producing content. So they screwed themselves with that. They set up a system where free porn was available. And so no one's to blame but themselves for that. But it was going to happen eventually. And I think the days of the single male producer they're numbered. Now, my role in the business in the future, if I were a young guy, I would want to hook on to a hot piece of ass that's going to commit to the business for long term and be the guy behind the scenes, run her business, be her producer, shoot the video, edit the video, actually be her social media manager, because a lot of these girls are too lazy to do their own damn Twittering and stuff like that. But a lot of them are. That's where I would see the single male role in this business being, because I truly believe this business will go straight to the model, the girl. They're already, they put out their Amazon lists, buy me shit. And they produce custom videos for gentlemen. And it's all direct to the model. And if they have the savvy, the models that have the savvy to produce their own and the technological wherewithal, they don't need a guy. They don't need anybody but themselves. And I know a few of my friends from early in the business that have become great producers and doing quite well as producers of their own content.
As people have listened to you tonight, how do they view your content?
Never thought you'd ask.
Oh, we always ask this at the end.
Always at the end so people get the plug.
Absolutely. I appreciate that. It's been great talking to you gentlemen tonight. It's been fun. You can go to davidmackvideo.com, M-A-C-K. That has the links to all the shit that I sell. I have three main websites, thebondagechannel.com, which is forced orgasms, predicament bondage, I basically tie up the girls and, do whatever makes their panties wet. The ticklechannel.com is sensual tickling, tease and denial, girl-girl tickling, girl-girl tease and denial, a lot of lesbian action there. And I have fiterotic.com, which is all the scenes that I've done with Winona. Things that I have a passion for muscular and athletic women. That's one of my fetishes as well. And so any woman that's muscular or athletic is on that site. And it runs the gamut from masturbation to femdom to bondage to, straight sex, whatever. And I just started a new clip store called the Handjob Channel, where I'm going to delve into torturing guys the same ways that I've tortured girls 20 years with some specific female help. And that's teasing guys until they beg to come, and then milking them and making them, until they are in tears.
It's only fair that the boys get to play too.
Absolutely. So, and that's called thehandjobchannel.com.
And we're going to put all of these links up on the show page. So anybody that missed any of those, check it out on the kinkycast.com site on this show, and you will be able to click right on through to those.
Well, David, it's so thrilling and exciting to see somebody doing something they love and inflamed about. I wish you many, many more years of doing what you love to do.
Woody, Mr. Beast, it's been a pleasure. And said, I've really enjoyed being with you all tonight. It's great to have podcasts that really delve into all the fetishes. And, keep doing what you're doing.
We plan on it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You have been listening to episode 145 of the Kinky Cast. For more information about this show, go to kinkycast.com. The Kinky Cast is a production of Rooster in the Round. On behalf of all our kinky crew, I'm Max. See you next week when we speak with Daddy Harley Medic on leadership in the community.